Okay, good evening, everyone. Thank you all for joining. And a special thank you, of course, to Aviva and Ami. So this is the culmination of a project that our kollel has been up to for the last 40, and I'm not going to say how many days, just in case somebody might get carried away. So it's going to end where it began. But right now we're toward the end, and that is focusing on the gift and the power of speech. And that's something that we've been doing in the kollel for the last, since the beginning of Sfiras HaOmer, with the daily emails, videos, and Divrei Torah and ideas. And what an amazing and powerful concept that really transforms the person, that transforms who we are. The Ribbono Shel Olam created the world with ma'amaros, with speech. So that vehicle is obviously an incredibly impactful and powerful tool. So thinking about how we use our speech is really such an important thing that we can do. I could tell you that I myself got hooked on this idea. Now some of you are thinking, he speaks so much Lashon Hara, why is he like... But I could tell you that since I started learning the Sefer Chavetz Chaim and Shmiras HaLashon, I definitely considerably reduced the amount of Lashon Hara that I spoke. And I got hooked on the Lashon Hara from this book. This is a very interesting biography. And you have to, if you're going to read it, you have to remember where it's coming from and the context in which it is written, because it's not, for, you know, most of us are not on the level of what is being described here. But this is the biography of the late Rebbetzin Kanievsky. And she was a superhuman figure, as you can find out from reading this book. But at the end, they have an appendix. One is they have water challah recipe. So for those who are interested in that, that's good. They have all kinds of tefillas, and that's one thing. And then they have a letter from Rebbetzin Kanievsky about careful language. And what she describes here is pretty amazing, and I would never have the audacity to suggest what she suggests in terms of the miracles that happen when a person observes Shmiras HaLashon. That's a dangerous thing. You have to be the level of Rebbetzin Kanievsky to start dealing with miracles. But all I can say is that there's no question that her suggestion, she quotes from Rav Yehuda Zev Segal from Manchester, about the importance of learning two halachas of Shmiras HaLashon a day. So I'm like, how long could it take to learn two halachas of Shmiras HaLashon a day? It's not going to take you more than 45 seconds. So if I put this, and I happen to receive the Sefer as a gift, actually, from Karen Biavna, which itself has a whole story to it. It was dedicated in memory of all the boys from the yeshiva who were murdered, who were killed during various wars over the years. So I had the book on the shelf. You know, I'm so busy talking Lashon Hara, who has time to read this Sefer? So I figure if I put it on my nightstand, so for 45 minutes before I go to sleep. And I can tell you that for me, it has certainly been a life-changing experience for the past months, thinking about Shmiras HaLashon. But what I wanted to talk about tonight, and to share with you for thinking, for your own consideration, it's actually nothing to do with speech at all. There are so many things that have been said, and the Chavetz Chaim writes so much about speech and the power of speech and the impact of speech and also the challenges and the negativity and the consequences that are associated with negative speech. I wanted to talk about the sound of silence. I wanted to talk about silence because I think if we think about it, we'll realize that, you know, part of us is concerned. Well, some of us in this room are very pious, so you're not concerned about this. But someone, an average, ordinary person like me who's not so pious, you might be concerned like, okay, so we're going to cut out Lashon Hara, so I'm not sure how much time I'm going to have, like, to talk anymore because, you know, there's really nothing to say. And then I'm thinking, okay, so I'll find something to say, but there's so much dead time, there's so much, like, quiet. I'm going to be sitting on the couch. Like, how's this going to work? And what's the meaning of all of that silence? So there were two great Jews who spoke once about the sound of silence, and we could parse that at a different time. But I wanted to talk about and reflect something that I was thinking about, three aspects of silence. Now the first one is really the most counterintuitive, and that is that I think, if we think about it in this way, the same way that speech has a creative element to it, I think that silence also has a creative element to it. It's not just that silence is the absence of speech, it's that there is something creative and constructive about silence itself. there's a speech coach. He lives in Teaneck. His name is Brent Baer. So he goes to give seminars in different places. So he once observed that what makes great music, he observed that it's not the musical notes, it's the pauses between the notes. That's what makes it coherent. That's what makes it meaningful. That's what creates drama. That's what I did just now. So whenever we're taught about speaking, you always want to put pause in a particular place. And that pause, it's not just the absence of speech. Rather, is that it gives you the opportunity to make something much more powerful, much more impactful. It has a creative quality to it. There is a a story that when I reached out to him to find out who it was, he did not remember who the story was with. But my Rebbe Muvuk, Dr. David Pelkovitz in psychology, so he told us once a story about a senior rabbinic figure. I don't remember who it was, and when I emailed him about it, he didn't remember who it was either. We joke about it because we're related. We joke in the family that whenever he says the research says, he's just making it up. We know he just makes it up as he goes along. So the story, I'm assuming that he thinks it happened. Let's assume that it did happen. So he pointed out there was a certain great Rosh Hashiva who went to pay a Shiva call to a family who had lost their son. And this gentleman, this elderly Rosh Hashiva, walked in. He sat down in the Shiva house and he said nothing. And he picked up, you know, sometimes in the Shiva home they have a picture of the person or some photographs. So he picked up the picture that he saw there on the coffee table and he looked at it and he just started to cry a little bit. He was clearly tearing up. He sat and then he said, Hamakom Yenachem. He picked himself up and he walked down. And later, the family members who were sitting there reflected on that and they said, you know what, that was the most powerful Shiva experience that we had today. So you will tell me speech and silence. Silence is just the absence of speech. No, it's not. You can convey so much through silence. You can create a moment through silence and you can change history. There is an amazing Medrash Rabbah in Esther Rabbah of a person who was a master of silence. And her name was Esther, because the pasuk says, "Ein Esther Mageres Molarita." Esther was the master of silence. So the Medrash Rabbah points out, "Melamed shetafsa shtika ba'atzma kerochel zekenasa zekenta." You know where she learned how to be quiet? The secret of silence. She learned it from her great 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 grandmother Rachel, who, when she saw that her sister was being given to her future husband, she was quiet. So you'll tell me that is the absence. It's not the absence, because the Medrash says, Omdu kol gedolei zara b'shtika, all of her descendants took this power. And what happened? So, she'avno hoisa b'choshen hoisa yoshvei. Later on, the tribe of Binyamin, they had the stone in the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. It's yoshvei lomar. That's what? Yesh peh, so to speak. Yesh peh, the Medrash says. There, you can have a mouth, but you don't say. So what happens to Rachel? She merited that she had two extra tribes. It's a creative thing. You would think she's going to have less children because her husband is going to be given away to somebody else. Says the Medrash, don't worry. By doing that act of chesed, through silence, that creative action, she's going to merit extra tribes. And what's going to happen to Binyamin, who doesn't say anything? He's going to have a child who's going to be named Shaul, who's going to become the king. And the Medrash goes on to describe how when you are quiet, it's not just that you're not speaking. You're creating something. You're creating an environment or something for the future. It's a little bit scary, but there's an amazing story about Rabbi Arye Levin. Rabbi Arye Levin was the tzaddik of Yerushalayim. He was an unusual superhuman figure. So many, many things happened to Rabbi Arye Levin, and he was a close disciple of Rav Kook. Now Rav Kook had a disciple who is an unusually pious man, and he was a Nazir. If you ever saw a picture, his name is Rav David Cohen. He literally had very long hair, a huge beard, never cut his hair, never drank wine. He was a Nazir. His name was Rav David Cohen. He was just called the Nazir. So the Nazir, not only was he a Nazir, he also would take upon himself very often what's known in the Muslim movement as a Tanis Dibur, a fast from speech, where he would sit and not speak to anyone. And this was known in the Muslim movement, this would happen. Rabbi Yitzchak Blaser used to take in Tanis Dibur sometimes for a whole Chodesh Elul, I believe. So this is an unusual level. So if Ari Levin once pointed out in this, there's an unbelievable biography. If you haven't seen it, it's called Ish Tzadik Haya Tzadik in Our Time. So I would have brought it, but I think I lent it to somebody and I've never seen it again. So eventually, when I get it back, so I can share with you, he says, sometimes you can learn a lot from people. They can send you a message in silence. So Ari once said that he had a problem and he needed some piece of advice. So he went to Beit HaRav, Rav Cook's house. And for those who do not know, you can still go there to this day. If you go down, Rechol Yafo, right near Kikar Tzion, if you make a left, instead of Kikar Tzion being on your right, if you make a left, there's a small side street, it's called Rechol Rav Cook, and right there, the original building of the yeshiva is still there. Now America's a Rav is in Kiryat Moshe, but the original building is still there. Rav Cook's study is still there the way it was. The Beis Medrash room is exactly the way that it was. So you can go there and see exactly where this story happened. So Rav Ari went to the Beis Medrash to see Rav Cook to get some advice for this question that he needed. And he comes to Beit HaRav and Rav Cook is not home. But he saw on the back bench, and you can imagine, it's like a stone building. He goes up the stairs, he comes inside, in the yeshiva, in the hall, which is not much better, bigger than this room, not much bigger. So he sees on the back row, the Nazir is sitting there. And he went over to the Nazir, but he realized, from seeing the Nazir, that he was in the Tanas Dibur, that he wouldn't speak. So Rav Ari describes, he said he sat down next to the Nazir, and he just sat for 5 minutes, quietly. And he says, after 5 minutes of sitting next to the Nazir in silence, he realized what he needed to do. He picked himself up and he left. Because he said he got the message. He got the message. Because sometimes silence can be creative. For someone who's on the spiritual level of the Nazir, his silence spoke to people. It's an unbelievable level. And I'll share one more anecdote, one more story. And this comes from a very unusual sefer. I guess it's unusual to me because I wouldn't have looked at him that way. There was a great Gaon, his name was Rav Avadi Yosef, and he was essentially one of the revolutionary figures of our own lifetime. I once had the privilege of seeing Rav Avadi and listening to him give a shir. So Rav Avadi has like voluminous farm because he knew everything. He knew everything about everything. They told after he passed away that when he was a teenager, someone from an old Egyptian library had donated 1,000 svarim to Porat Yosef, which is a big Sephardi yeshiva in the old city. So the librarian, Porat Yosef, had in their own collection, they had about 10,000 svarim, and he picked up all these svarim, and they were able to identify all the different people who they were, and they had only 11 svarim left that they couldn't identify. Rav Avadi was walking down the hall, and they called him over and said, could you help us? He flipped it open within one page. He was able to identify every single sefer, who the Mechaber was. So Rav Avadi knew everything, mamash, everything about everything. But he didn't just write about halacha. He wrote this sefer, which is amazing. It's a sefer on Pirkei Avos called Anaf Eitz Avos, meaning it's a play on words from the pasuk, which ends with an ayin, avos, like braided, with an aleph. And he collects here all kinds of stories and interesting just ideas, a lot of stories. Maislach, chassidisha maislach, from the Sephardi rabbi. Who would have thought? So the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos that Shimon, who was Rebbe Shimon, the son of Rebbe Gamliel HaZakein, said, all the days I grew up between the sages, I didn't find anything as good. The best thing is to be quiet. That's the best thing. So Rav Avadi quotes a story here about the Tzaddik Rav Yisrael of Vizhnitz. Sephardi rabbi quoting Chassidish Rebbe. This is great. So he tells the story of the Vizhnitz Rebbe who asks his shamus, he says, we have to go somewhere. We have to go visit someone. So they go to visit the home of a very, very affluent banker. They knock on the door, and the banker's like, wow, the Vizhnitz Rebbe is here. So he welcomes him in. He sits him down at the dining room table. He gets him a piece of cake. And he says, what can I do for the Rebbe? He says, nothing. Nothing. He's kind of sitting there. He doesn't know what to make of it. The Rebbe says, okay, thank you very much. He gets up, and he leaves. So he heads out. Meanwhile, the shamus is straggling behind. And the balabas says to the shamus, what's this all about? And the shamus says, I don't know. I got to tell you, I have no idea. He just told me to come and we're going to go. So finally, they go back to the little coach and they're about to leave. So the man comes up and says, Rebbe, I have to ask you, please, please, can you please tell me what this is all about? Rebbe says, look, I can't say. He says, please, I'm begging you. I'm dying of curiosity over here. What is this all about? So Rebbe says, you know, I had to be Mekayim Adin. a halacha that appears in the Gemara. The Gemara says that just like it's a mitzvah to say that which is heard, it's a mitzvah not to say that which will not be heard. So the Rebbe says, look, I had something to say, but I couldn't say it. So I figured I would just not say it. But I couldn't not say it in my house, and you wouldn't know that I didn't say it. So I just wanted to let you know that I had something to say, but I can't say it. This guy's like, all right, do me a favor. I can't take this. Just tell me what it is. The Rebbe says, I can't. I'm going to violate the words of Chazal. He says, no, I'm going to listen. So the Rebbe says, okay, fine. He finally relents. He says, I'll tell you. He says, there's a woman in the neighborhood. She is a widow. She's an almana. And she has absolutely nothing. And you know that she has a mortgage in your bank. And that mortgage is past due. And she came crying to me because she knows she is in arrears for her mortgage. And she got an eviction notice. And she's going around collecting. She's going to do whatever she can. But there's no chance that she's going to be able to make even a decent payment on this mortgage before the bank puts her out on the street. So that's the situation. So the banker immediately starts saying, he says, look, I don't own the bank. I'm just the bank manager. So the vision just says, stop! That's why I didn't come. That's why I didn't say. Because I knew. There was nothing you could do about it. There's nothing you could say about it. I just wanted to follow the words of Chazal. He says, I'm regretting that I came here. And immediately he jumps into the carriage and he runs away. So fly, so what happens? So this banker, he goes to put his head on his pillow that night, and he's so troubled. You know, he can't sleep. He's going to sleep knowing that there's a woman out there who's so destitute that she can't make a basic mortgage payment. So what does he do the next day? He comes to the bank, and he transfers from his own account, because he doesn't have authority to forego the money. Quietly, he transfers from his own account 600 rubles into her account. He sends back to the Vizhitsa Rebbe afterwards. He says, thank you for not saying. It's the power of not saying. Sometimes it is more than the power of saying. So that's the first aspect, that not speaking, silence, has a creative, powerful contribution. That's one aspect. The second of the three items that I wanted to mention comes from this book. So this book is one of a myriad of books authored by Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky, who for a long time was the head of a leading psychiatric facility outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Now he lives in Teaneck. So I was davening. Mechama doesn't like this for two reasons. She doesn't like this because A, she doesn't like when I tell little mice look of how I got these books, and B, she doesn't like that I buy the books in the first place. But I was in somebody's house for one of these like Friday night house minyanim, and the best thing you can do when you go to somebody's house is check out their library, because you never know what people have on the shelf. So they had this on the shelf, and I started opening this book, and I was like, okay, I have to buy this online because I don't know where I'm going to get it. But he describes the following story, Dr. Twersky. The story describes how in 1965, keep in mind, this is a Chassidish Rebbe who's also a psychiatrist. It's already a good start. So he describes how in 1965, he became the director of psychiatry at a major psychiatric hospital, which is in the area, in the Pittsburgh area. And it's serving a population of 3 million people. And this psychiatric hospital is the intake for two major state hospitals, in addition to 300 psychiatric patients that they have on their own. So all day, all night, he's on call. So finally, after 3 years, he decided he's going to go on vacation. So he just needed a vacation. So where's he going to go? He says, I'm not going to Disney World. I don't want to see anybody else. I don't want to talk to anybody else. I just need some quiet time by myself. So he figures he'll go to Hot Springs, Arkansas. Because someone told him that Hot Springs, Arkansas, which apparently is a horse racing town, says he's going to go to Hot Springs, Arkansas because they have mineral baths there and he has a very bad back. So he figures he'll go to the mineral bath. It'll be great. So he checks into the hotel. And he says that the next morning he goes into the spa where he was led into a little cubicle and he was put in a whirlpool bath. And he says, it was paradise. Not only was I comforted by the warm, swirling waters, but I was also beyond anyone's reach. The emergency room, the patients, their families, the doctors, the doctors, the police, the caseworkers, the social workers. No one could reach him. So I just relaxed in what was heaven on earth. After 6 or 7 minutes, I emerged from the bath and remarked to the attendant how wonderful this experience had been, just what I needed. The attendant politely told me that I had to return to the bath. The treatment began with soaking 25 minutes in the mineral water. I got back in the water, but after 5 minutes, I emerged again and told the attendant that, "Genug, it's enough already." He instructed me that if I did not stay for the full 25 minutes, I could not continue with the next phase of the treatment. What had begun as heaven was now purgatory. I watched the second hand on the clock move slowly. Each minute seemed an hour, and the final 10 minutes of the bath were an eternity, barely tolerable. Later that day, I reflected on what had been a rude awakening. I had been able to take 3 years of a harassing schedule and stride, but I could not take paradise for more than 7 minutes. So what is the problem? He says, a bit of analysis led me to conclude that many people are probably not capable of enjoying true relaxation. Why? He says, what happened to me in that cubicle was that I had been deprived of all diversions. There was no one to talk to, nothing to look at, nothing to read, nothing to listen to. I had been left all alone. The immediate company of myself. All that was in that cubicle was me. I was alone with me. I concluded that my intolerance of relaxation came from being unable to stand my own company. I didn't like myself. So this book, which is called Life's Too Short, is about self-esteem and being okay with being with yourself. But when you think about it for a minute, I would suggest that the koach of shtika, the concept of silence, is very much connected with this idea. How comfortable are we with who we are, with ourselves? Just being by ourselves. You know, think about it. How often we're driving down McCormick, so it's a half a mile between Dempster and Maine. Did I ever contemplate sitting just in the car without the radio, the phone, hopefully not texting, checking the web, reading the newspaper? In addition to, so these things don't count because they're just generally shaving and eating, but those aren't involving other people. Just sitting, can we do that? We have a hard time doing that. So what we do is we fill that time. It's like, he's talking about 7 minutes in a whirlpool in Hot Springs, Arkansas. I can hardly sit for 5 minutes. I'm like, the first thing I do is I gotta turn on the radio. I need to be busy with somebody else. I need to be hearing what's going on with them. So you're right, it's good to use the time in the car productively. But the idea that that being comfortable with silence and being comfortable with ourselves is something we should think about helps us reflect on the koach hadibur. Because very often, I would suggest, we're using speech to fill that space where we're not comfortable with our own silence. And what happens then is we're not just using that speech to kind of fill the time. Very often we're going to use that speech as a defense mechanism, as a shield, to focus our energies. Instead of thinking about ourselves, we're going to talk about other people, we're going to talk about what happened to this one and that one. And sometimes that's important because we want to be curious about other people's lives. We want to connect with people. But how often, and what we can think about as we go through the process of thinking about Shmiras HaLashon, is how often when we're using speech, is it about not being comfortable with who we are, because we need to address that issue in somebody else? You know, that challenge of not speaking negatively, is that because it really emanates from some personal insecurity that I'm not comfortable dealing with for myself? So, you know, when I was growing up, my parents always told me, because I have a brother who's a year and a half younger than I am, they used to say, you know, you don't have to build yourself up by pushing somebody else down, right? You can build yourself up just by building yourself up. Sometimes, if you want to feel bigger than somebody else, you can just push them down, which is yadua among siblings. I'm not going to get involved in that practice of, you know, how that works out. You can call my brother, he can tell you exactly how that works. But the idea that when we speak and we think about the kind of speech that we use, is the speech that we're using putting other people down to make us just feel comfortable with who we are, so we could sit in the bath and say, you know what, you know, shalom aleichem nafshi, I'm really okay. So that is, I think, another aspect of something to do, to think about silence. That would be the second nekuda. And then the third is from another Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah says in the third chapter of Pirkei Avos, from Rabbi Akiva says that Siyag Lachachma Shtika, a fence around wisdom is silence, is quiet. So I would say that this teaching can help all of us. Because silence in this aspect, I think, is correlated with growth. So this teacher of mine, Brent Baer, so when I reached out to him as I was preparing, so he mentioned to me, he said that, think about it, the word silent and the word listen are the same letters. I said, I never noticed that. I never thought about that. But the idea that, you know, when you can have chachma, when you can grow in your wisdom, when you can develop, that's when you have the opportunity to listen to other people. And there are two ways to parse this Mishnah. Siyag l'chachma shtika, so the simple way, and this is a very nice English commentary on Pirkei Avos by Irving Bunim, who was a very active lay leader, I don't know when he died, 40 years ago, 30, 40 years ago probably, in America. So he wrote his own commentary on Pirkei Avos, and he points out that the initial interpretation of this Mishnah, siyag l'chachma shtika, as a person who already has wisdom, should be quiet, and then they'll be perceived as a wise person. But I think it's more than that. It's that the more silent we are, the more opportunities we have to learn. Because what happens when we're talking, we're not listening. You know, Ezel Chacham Halomi Mikol Adam. And you need that time. You need that time on two levels, I think. You need it simply because if you're talking, you're not listening. You're not intaking from somebody else, you're not growing. But you're also not processing. If you're always talking, you're not processing. So there's an unbelievable Bamidbar Rabbah. So if you open up a Sefer Torah, you look inside the Sefer Torah, the way that it's structured is that there are breaks. There are paragraphs in every Sefer Torah. There are two kinds of paragraphs. There are psuchos and there are stumas. So some of them are middle breaks in the middle of the line. There's text, all the black lines, and then there's a space, and sometimes it's the end of the line going to the next line. So the Medrash Rabbah wonders, in Bamidbar, why do you need paragraph breaks? It says something unbelievable. What does it say? I'll give you the quote. Litein revach lemoshe lehisbonin. To give time, to give a pause to Moshe Rabbeinu, just to think. Because if the whole time he's talking with the Rabbon Shalom at Har Sinai, this is this law, he says, well, what does that mean? And how does this work? So there's no silence. There's no pause. There's no sound of silence at Har Sinai. It's just the Rabbon Shalom is, you know, he's talking, Moshe Rabbeinu is downloading, so he's not processing. So says that, obviously this medrash has obviously deep spiritual meaning that I have no clue what it really means, but on the simple level, it's saying even Moshe Rabbeinu, even the person who is the sole arbiter of Torah for eternity, he needed time to process. If you're always talking, then we're never going to process. And when we do that, that's when we're really learning. So we're learning by not speaking so we can listen, and we're also learning so that we can process that which is the information going around us. And this can play out in three different ways. There is a comment of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon wrote sparsely, but he did write a commentary on Sefer Mishle, and in there he breaks down all of our lives into three different dimensions. There is Bein Adam LaMakom, the responsibilities between us and the Ribbono Shel Olam. There is Bein Adam LaChavero, interpersonal responsibilities. And then there's a third dimension of our religious growth, of our identity, that is called Bein Adam LaAtzmo, between a person and themselves. And so I think that these three areas can all be impacted by and can be developed through silence. There is a pasuk in Koheles that points out, it's in the beginning of Koheles, in the beginning of the fifth chapter, it says, be careful. Ki helokim ba'shamayim v'ato ha'la'aretz al-kein yu devarecha ma'atim. You want to develop a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam? You want to really cultivate a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You know what you need to do? You need to spend more time listening than talking. right? We need to talk to the Rebbeinu Shalom. We need to learn. We need to daven. But we need to listen. We need to be quiet. We need to listen, A, because we need to listen to what the Torah is telling us, but we also need to listen because sometimes the Rebbeinu Shalom sends us messages, and if we're so busy talking, we didn't hear them. We didn't notice them. There's a principle in Yoredeya. There's a Yoredeya halakhic principle that comes up sometimes in the kitchen, and it happens to me all the time, all the time. I come out of the supermarket, and I have no clue where the car is. Why do I have no clue where the car is? Because when I got out of the car the first time, I was on the phone. So I got out of the car, I was on the phone. I'm making circles around the different aisles, and I'm not getting involved in which supermarket, which was cheaper, which is comparing. I'm not getting involved in that. That's already, I know, the whole tumult the last few weeks. I'm going like hakafas around the supermarket because, first of all, I'm still half on the phone, half not on the phone. So then I come out of the supermarket. Bekoshi, I have, I think, most of what I need because it's written down. If it wasn't written down, that's gefarla. There's no chance. But then I'm like, well, where is the phone? I don't know where the phone is. Where is the car? I mean, I don't know where the car is. So I start wandering around. I start with the clicker. It happens all the time. I go to a wedding. I'm on the phone. I get out of the car. I come out of the place. I have no idea. I have no idea. You start pressing the panic button. Then you're okay. So why is that? So there is a principle based on the Gemara. It says, Yoredei milsa de lo ramya ale de inshi lav adate. Something that you're not paying attention to, it won't register. So if when I get out of the car, I'm focused on, I'm talking to the person on the phone, so then I'm not paying attention to where I parked the car. So of course, when I come back, I'm not going to know where the car is. So the Shulchan Aruch is discussing it in a kitchen context. You know, I don't know which ingredient, or I didn't know what happened, or I wasn't paying attention, I didn't, you know, by this happened. So, you know, you can't say you're going to have an opinion on it because if you weren't paying attention, you probably didn't remember. You probably didn't notice because you were doing other things. But it's so much so when we have the opportunity to listen to the messages that the Rebbeinu Shalom sends us, that if we take some time to be quiet, not to speak so much, like the Pasuk says in the beginning of Kohelas, so maybe that relationship can grow a little bit. It can grow a little more because we'll be able to pay attention. We'll hear what's going on. So that's on one side. The second dimension, which is the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, this is what Dr. Pelkovitz used to talk about in one of the courses about conflict mediation, about a specific technique that certain therapists use. So he was describing it to us, and then we had to role play it in the desks. It's called the speaker-listener technique. So you don't have to be mamish, the brightest bulb on the tree, to figure out what that means. You know, what do we do? You have two guys. One is the husband. The other one is the wife. They're sitting in two desks in the Smicha program. And so Dr. Balkman says, okay, the speaker-listener technique goes like this. Now, I don't know if somebody got a PhD to figure this out, but if they did, good for them. One party speaks, and the other one listens. Then the other one speaks, and the first one listens. Not such an Einfall, but his point was, first of all, he says that very often when he, in the real world, which you can ask people who do this for a profession, so they can tell you whether this is true or not. In the real world, so often, two people are having a conversation, but they're not really having any conversation. Each of them is having a monologue. One is talking at the other one is talking back at the first one, and no one's listening. So he says, you know what you have to do? We're going to have the speaker-listener game. One of you is going to be the speaker, the other one is going to be the listener. And that's it. If you're the listener, I don't care how many terutzim you have, I don't care how many comments you have, I don't care what your perspective on this is, it doesn't matter. You are the listener. Don't worry, you'll be the speaker next. This is with adults, not children. You'll be the speaker next. And they do this. He told me people get paid to do this, to do the speaker-listener technique. And the truth is, this is a davar mefursam. For some of you, this is good reading. This is called The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey, Olav Hasholom. He just died like about a year or two ago. So the fifth, which we could call the Bechin of Netzach Lahavdil, the principles of empathic communication. This is something that Dr. Pelkovitz referred to all the time. And he doesn't flesh it out quite like this, Dr. Pelkovitz, but he has the yisod that Dr. Pelkovitz used to say all the time. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. If you're always talking, you're never going to understand where the other person is coming from. Because you're always talking, you're never listening. You're never really understanding them. And you know what happens? Because I've done this so many times, only talked to the other person, you know, you could see their tzittering already. That person gets the message that you're not really listening to them. They get it. They know that you're talking, and they're not getting through. So the challenge on the Bein Adam LaChaveru side sometimes in the cultivating the relationships using the power of silence is to just be quiet for a minute. And I'm speaking to myself. Just be quiet and listen to what the other person has to say. And you know what? In the long run, it's going to be better off for me so that they will feel that they were actually heard and understood. So this is the second aspect of shtika. But the third aspect, and this is the point that is elaborated on by the Chafetz Chaim at great length in the Shmiras HaLashon, because the Chafetz Chaim has two svarim on the power of speech. And the first one is the laws of Lashon Hara, called Sefer Chafetz Chaim. The second book is called Shmiras HaLashon. In this volume, this small volume, they're actually, both books are put into one. You can get them separately, you can get them in English. That is the Bein Adam La'atzmo. And when the Vilna Gaon speaks about Bein Adam La'atzmo, he means a person's personal midos. And that the way we speak really reflects the midos that we have. And how we control our speech reflects our midos. And the ability to be silent is an expression of our midos, of our characteristics. So oftentimes we are goaded to speak because of something that ticks us off, something that incites us, something that upsets us. So the Chafetz Chaim in Sefer Shmiras HaLashon points out that these midos are really, that's the bread and butter of what we need to work on. The Rambam writes in the Hilchos Deos that there are different kinds of midos. Imagine you're sitting on a plane, you know, you're sitting comfortably in your seat, and this happens to me sometimes because I'm wearing a yarmulke, so, you know, I'm sure it happens to everybody, but I don't know why it happens sometimes more than others. So someone says now, oh, are you Jewish? So you know that's the end of your flight. You know, you're done right there. I thought I was going to sleep, I was going to read, I was going to nap, I was going to write an article. That's the end. Are you Jewish? That's the kiss of death for that flight. You know, it's 2 hours to LaGuardia, you've got 2 hours of talking. So are you Jewish? Am I going to say no? Yeah, I'm Jewish. So is Judaism an extremist religion? You know, they read on the news, they hear all these things. Is Judaism an extremist religion? So what would you say? Is it an extremist religion? I would say probably it depends. Because the Rambam says in Hilchos Deos, generally speaking, we have an aversion to extremism. We like to go, according to the Rambam, the Shvil Hazav, right down the middle of the road. The Rambam says, however, there are two areas where the Rambam says a person is obligated to be an extremist. So I would tell this person on the plane, you should know, in certain areas, we must be extremists. What are these two areas? The Rambam says, in the realm of gaiva, hubris, arrogance, and kaas, and anger. Now those two midos, those two negative traits, are very much linked to each other. You know, why do I get angry? I get angry because I was expecting something and my expectations were not met. You know, I was waiting downstairs in the car, honking, and whoever it is, I'm not going to say who it is, fill in the blank, wasn't ready when I was ready. And I texted that I was going to be there in 5 minutes. So, I is the gaiva, and then the honking is going to be the kas manifestation of that. The incessant honking, and then the texting, and then the phone call. And that's where, says the Chafetz Chaim, that's where the Koach HaDibur comes in. Because when that person comes out, finally, with whatever they need ironed or straightened or, you know, whatever they're doing over there, I'm not getting involved in that. So then you have a crossroads. So that's where the Chafetz Chaim says you have to be careful about that Koach HaDibur. That's where the Tikkun HaMidos comes in. That's where the true growth in a person comes in. You know, I could say, I know for myself, for some people, learning Gemara, you know, is very challenging. For some of them, it's easier. But I can say that learning Gemara is something that I can learn from teachers. I had many great Rabbeim. And a certain sense, you know, if I have great teachers, it'll help me learn. But Tikkun HaMidos, in a certain sense, you just have to do it by yourself. Nobody, you need tools, you need role models, we need Sfarim, we need Chizuk, we need whatever we can get. But the bottom line is, that's the real spade work. That's really where the rubber hits the road. That's where you become a good person. That's when you transform your life. And those things are difficult, but that's what it is. That's the Gra writes in his commentary on Mishlei, that we're meant to beat the challenges that are put in front of us inside of ourselves. So I would say in this third aspect, there's Ben Adam HaMakom, being quiet and listening to the Rabbono Shalom's messages. There's the Ben Adam HaVeiro, the speaker-listener, being quiet so we can listen to other people, what they're telling us, to really develop those relationships. And then there is the most difficult, the biting our lip, and then ultimately training ourselves through the Mida of Shtika, through the Mida of silence, to develop proper midos. And the more that we're quiet, you know what? Maybe we'll hear that other person when they get in the car and they'll say, you know what? I'm so sorry I was late because such and such a thing happened to me. And you know what? If I would have let them have it before they walked in the door, so then who would have been the one with their foot in their mouth? It would have been me, because I would have been the one running my mouth. As opposed to if I'm tofis the pelech of shtika, so then that's what the Chafetz Chaim talks about at several places in the end of the Shemiras HaLashon, about the importance of the concept of shtika in terms of fixing our midos. So we'll conclude with where I think Ami began this story. Ami began this story where he came across a letter from the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon wrote a letter, and he wrote a letter when he was leaving his family to go to Eretz Yisrael. The Vilna Gaon lived at the end of the 18th century, and his mother at that time was still living. Now, he wrote a letter to his wife and to his mother, which is pretty intense, let me just say. I don't know if you can describe, is intense the right word?
Absolutely.
Let's put it this way. I would not recommend anybody in this room writing that letter to their mother, unless they are the Gra. Unless you are the Vilna Gaon, don't try writing that letter. It's pretty intense musser, right? I don't know how else to describe it. It's like...
You can't react right away. You got to let it sink in a little before you...
Yeah, it's pretty hair-raising, let's just say. It's an intense letter. And one of the things that he talks about in that letter is about Lashon Hara, about the dangers of Lashon Hara. And this is how the whole conversation that Ami had about Lashon Hara and this whole idea of the Gra, and then the whole project got started. But the Gra writes there, he writes that every moment, kol rega verega, every moment that a person sha'adam chosim piv zocha bishvilo la'or hagonos she'ein malach ubirya yechola l'shair. A person, every moment that a person restrains themselves and is able to withstand that impulse to speak the negative speech that they would have said but they held themselves back for, he says there is a spiritual light that is so powerful, that is so bright, that is so incandescent, that it outshines anything that even an angel could imagine. That's the Koach HaShtika. The Koach HaShtika is this Or HaGonos. It's this endless light, and maybe there's a deep Kabbalistic teaching here that words, speech, it has a limit, it has a form, it has a shape. Every letter has a limit. Your sentence begins and it ends. But when you have a niggun that has no words, it's a machol. It goes in a circle, never begins and never ends. The silence, the sound of silence, that's the Or HaGonos. It's endless light. That's the ultimate connection. And this is the gift of silence, I would say. You know, we talk about reflecting on this project and reflecting on doing it in the honor of Tani and thinking about what silence means for different people and what it means for us. This is how I kind of wanted to reflect on it just for myself and share it with everybody here. I hope at least something was meaningful, to think about the power of silence in its creativity, the power of silence in it relates to, in as much as it relates to who I am, being comfortable with myself as I relate to other people, and the idea of the silence as a mode of growth, both Bein Adam LaMakom, Bein Adam LaChaveiro, and Bein Adam LaAtzmo. And hopefully through this collective effort, we can all grow in our Avodas Hashem, in our lives as mentioned, as people, and we can grow together to build a community that will be really proud of how we use our speech and also how we use our silence. So I thank you all for coming.